for 30 plus years. I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid. Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 34, Helping Kids Navigate Messages from Media. I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Today, I'm excited to be talking with my friend Anthony Weber about the importance of paying attention to the messages kids receive from media. This is going to be a very important conversation. Also in this episode, I'll be featuring a listener question from a couple parents struggling with toddlers' anger. And as always, I'll share my points to ponder for you to start using right away. And parents, as a reminder, don't just download episodes, click subscribe. When you do that, you're joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribed list. You won't regret it. And we'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is also now available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcasts, subscribe today and don't miss a single episode. Parents, we all know that talking with our kids about sex is uncomfortable. And when it comes to having that initial talk with your child about sex when they're about 8 years old, I always say in every couple, there's one who's a chicken and one who's an even bigger chicken, who just won't have the talk at all. But the truth is, no matter how uncomfortable it is, beginning a conversation about sex early with your child is extremely important because it puts you in the driver's seat. The tricky part is many parents often don't know where to begin or where to end. What if they say the wrong thing? What if they talk too much or too little or use the wrong words? Too often, not knowing how or when they should approach the topic of sex with their child, many parents just don't do it. And then this leaves your child at the hands of the culture or his friends to teach him about sex. I have created a digital toolkit just for you called How to Have the Talk with Your Child. It walks you through the process of having that initial conversation with your child about sex. The toolkit's packed with a variety of resources and all the information you need to get ready to have that initial conversation, including ages and stages chart to help you determine when to have the talk with your child. There's an ebook on talking to your child about sex, a script to help guide you through the discussion. And for those of you who are really, really chicken, you're the big chicken, it even includes a video of me giving the talk directly to your child. How easy is that? Talking to your child about sex doesn't need to be intimidating or scary. It can be really a great experience, and it'll help you establish a strong relationship with your child. This month alone, I'm excited to offer you How to Have the Talk with Your Child Toolkit for 20% off. Just go to my website, megmeekermd.com, click on Parenting Resources, and use your code TALKPODCAST when you check out. Parents, this topic about sex is far too important to hand over to somebody else to talk to your kids about. You need to do it. Go to my website, check out How to Have the Talk with Your Child Toolkit, 20% off. You need to stay in the driver's seat when it comes to talking to your kids about sex, and I'm here to help. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 34. Stay with us. So now let's move on to my points to ponder. My first point to ponder for you today is embed yourself in your children's worlds. You're going to hear Anthony Weber talk about the importance of not just telling your kids to not watch this and don't play that and give them a bunch of no's, but how important it is for you as a parent to engage your child and see what they're seeing, watch what they're watching, pay attention to the games that they want to play. This is a lot of work, but it's critically important because parents need to know what their kids are exposed to. Many times you won't like it, but you need to see what your kids are playing and wanting to watch. It's very important to embed yourself in your kids' worlds because you then can influence what they're watching. You can have conversations. You can ask them good questions without lecturing them you can experience certain things together. Of course, there are going to be limits on the types of shows and games that your kids can watch or play, but staying involved and interested helps children stay open in their communication with you. And that is particularly important beyond just what they're watching. You want to know what kids are doing in their own lives. Second, ask good questions about the shows he watches and you watch with him. Ask who the main characters are. What are your kids feeling about their behaviors, the choices the people are making? And listen closely to your kids' answers. Don't just come back with a negative reply, or don't tell them that they're wrong, or don't try to teach them, but just sit and listen to the answers that they give to your questions. And rather than tell them what to think, teach your children by asking their opinions first. This is so important. A child is much more likely to listen to what you have to say if first you ask them what their opinion is and then you listen to it. Because then they feel that you're paying attention, you're respecting, you're liking what they have to say, and you want to hear what they have to say. Very important in keeping communication open and flowing between you and your children. Then, once your child gives you his opinion or answers your questions, you can direct further questions that will make them think the way you're thinking. In other words, you can bring them to a conclusion by asking specific questions. And many times you can direct that conversation by directing the questions. When kids see that you're genuinely interested in their opinions, they're far more likely to keep talking and they'll want to sit down and watch with you. And most importantly, they're going to listen to you when you tell them why in the future they shouldn't watch a certain show, listen to certain music, or play a certain game. Third, set clear game rules about media and tell your kids why. Many parents either tell their kids that they can never watch television or movies, or they go to the opposite extreme and they surrender all rules and guidelines. They simply say, there's not a whole lot I can do about it. Kids are going to watch these things. They're either going to watch bad things in my house, and if I don't have them, then they're going to go to their friends' houses and they're going to watch bad stuff. Don't adopt that attitude, because that's not true. Kids will listen to the boundaries you set if you explain to them why you have them and if you've already listened to their opinions about the movies that you're watching. So review current movies and television shows and then make a list of acceptable and non-acceptable ones. Tell your kids why you've chosen some and ruled out others. And when you do that, give them specific reasons. Don't be afraid to tell them that shows are off limits while you're at a friend's home. Many parents are afraid to do this because they assume that their kids are going to watch whatever their friends are watching. This isn't true. I've seen this happen in not only my own kids, but in many of the kids I've seen in my practice. If friends watch shows that you disapprove of, tell your child or your teen. When the show comes on, your teen or child is to call you and you will come and pick them up. And if you are afraid that your teenager or child's going to feel a little geeky or awkward calling you, all you have to do is tell your child to blame the call on you, that you're the parent who doesn't want him to see him and you're kind of crazy and kids will call you in a minute. It really actually works. I have seen many adolescent age boys, for instance, come to me with sleep issues because they've watched movies that have terrified them. The problem is, when an 11 or 12-year-old boy watches a very scary movie or a grotesque movie, they don't want to tell their friends or their parents that they're really upset because they don't want to look like a wimp. They feel that they're a boy, they're a guy, they should be able to handle it, not only handle it, but they should like it. But I have seen kids who've come to me with disrupted sleep, nightmares, sad and angry feelings, and many kids will go along with your choices easily because they will feel protected if they know that you won't let them watch horror movies or scary movies. Think of all the good night sleeps you're going to be giving to your adolescent boys, and you're going to keep them from being frightened, as many of them are, by watching a lot of scary movies. I'd like you now to listen in on a conversation I had with Anthony Weber about helping kids navigate messages from media. Anthony has tremendous insights, and I know you're really going to enjoy this conversation. My guest today is Anthony Weber. He is a pastor of Church of Living God. He's an extraordinary teacher to high school students. He teaches Understanding the Times, and he teaches a college-level course called Ethical Dilemmas. Anthony, thanks for being with me.
It's good to be here, Meg.
Now, I wanted you on the podcast today because a lot of parents come to me and say, you know, I'm really concerned about my kids and the media, the messages they get from movies and media, and that is one of your sweet spots, isn't it? So tell me what you have seen over the past 10 years, the messages in general that kids get from movies and media in general.
It's a great question and a really broad question. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give some really broad answers because depending what you're listening to or watching, it can change dramatically. So we live in an age where you can do something called ego casting. That is, you can broadcast to your own ego, and that could be music, movies, it can include books, you name it. But because there's so many things out there,
yes,
you can pick and choose what you want. Mm-hmm. And we could probably have a whole separate discussion about the fragmentation of culture, but
kids do that subconsciously, don't they? That ego broadcasting, is that what you're calling it?
Yeah, ego casting.
Ego casting. Mm-hmm. So they search out movies and genres that make them feel good about themselves?
So I think there's two things that could potentially happen. One is they're looking for stories that confirm what they believe to be true about the world. So we could talk, and we probably will talk more later today, about how most of the stories you're seeing today in young adult literature and movies, you really see a breakdown of the family.
Yeah.
There's almost always one or both parents missing.
Yes.
And I think for many kids in particular, they're finding stories where they can find themselves in the story, okay, and it affirms that they're not alone. On the other hand, I think they're often looking for stories that will give them hope that even though this is where I am, mm-hmm, that doesn't mean I have to stay here. So you'll also see a lot of stories where something rises out of the hero,
yeah,
that they didn't know they had.
Yeah. So is this a good thing? You know, if we're seeing families breaking down and we're seeing art imitating what is happening in real life, is this good for kids to see a divorced family on television, but the kid does okay in the end? Is that good for him or is that bad for him?
Well, that sounds good to me because I think that's a hopeful message because,
yes,
I don't know the exact stats. You might know this better, of how many children are now in divorced homes or how many children there are of single moms or single dads who,
right,
were never married. So I think a story that shows that situation and shows that it can be okay. Okay.
Yes.
That's a good story. However, I think you'd want to add to that, you want it to be honest.
Yes.
Because it's not just a simple thing. There's not a magic fix to that.
Right.
There's a lot of complication. So I'm not opposed to those kind of stories at all. What I worry about sometimes is that the story can begin to just present that as if this is the norm, almost as if this is okay,
yeah,
because it's just going to happen.
Yeah. I would say, and I would wonder if you'd agree, that the norm in movies is a home where if parents are present, they don't have much influence or authority, and they're not important. And that is growing and building in media, don't you think?
I do. But I also wonder sometimes if there's not a more subtle message coming through that even in movies where that you see the parents don't seem to be important or they're idiots, there's just a lot of stories where,
yeah,
that's the case. I'm wondering if, once again, it's not fulfilling two roles. One is we're seeing that it's a representation of, unfortunately, what a lot of kids experience.
Right.
But there also seems to be a longing in those stories for that not to be the way it is. Mm-hmm. Simply by showing it, I think we're meant to see that this world is broken. This world's really fallen and in need of some type of redemption. Most of those stories then will offer a form of redemption.
Mm-hmm.
They just usually don't offer Christ because they're not coming from that worldview.
Right. Do kids see that, though? I mean, you're looking at it through adult eyes and adult thinking. Does a 14-year-old kid see that? That, gee whiz, there isn't a mom or a dad, or there's a mother or a father in the show that's an idiot, but I have a longing for life to be a little bit different. Do they know that?
I don't know, but that's where I think the church has an opportunity to step in right now in our culture and make a huge difference. And not just increasingly model healthy family, but learning how to step in as surrogate mom and dads, whether it's being involved in Big Brother, Big Sister, or foster care programs, or whatever the option is that Christians can get involved in and say, wait, I know you're seeing these stories, that you recognize you're not alone in this, and there's a sense of maybe peace and affirmation that you're not weird, you're not strange, this this happens in life, but rarely is the story completed properly. And I think rather than Christians necessarily complaining that the media is not doing our work for us, it's our job to step up and give truth and give hope.
Because the truth is, kids gravitate to it, and the church can go, don't watch that, don't watch that, don't watch that. But kids are watching it. But do you worry that because we're perpetuating a model that is unhealthy, i.e. kids sort of raising themselves in movies, that kids begin to see over time, that's the way life is, and I should accept it, and this is what I can expect when I'm 25. What I'm finding is kids who are coming from divorced families are very gun shy of marriage. They're very concerned. They don't know if they can make it.
Right.
So they may wait longer to get married, or they may even say, or go the opposite way and say, I'm going to get married and I will never do to my kids what my parents did to me. And I'm seeing that. And yet, no matter which way they turn out, they don't know how to get a healthy family.
Right. That's the dilemma, I think, between telling too idealistic of a story and too fatalistic of a story. So people will often talk about a time in American culture where everything was kind of whitewashed, this great little suburbia gloss over it, and nobody talked about their problems. So on the one hand, you often have bigger than life heroes or stories where everything was awesome. Let's take the Cosbys as a good TV show as an example. So on the one hand, that can be a good thing in that it offers a form of hope. But you saw a trend go away from that very slowly over the years, and now I think it's almost come full circle, where they've said, okay, no more pretending everything's okay. So the upside of that is that now there's an honest acknowledgement about the brokenness of the world. The downside is, as you've been talking about just now, it can become very fatalistic.
Yeah.
Finding that sweet spot of acknowledging life is hard, things fall apart, it doesn't have to mean I'm a bad person or it was my fault, especially if you're a kid. Finding that spot between too idealistic so it feels shallow, too fatalistic that it feels hopeless, that's a hard spot to find. But that's once again where I think Christians need to be aware of the stories that culture is telling, know the movies, know the books, so that we can step in and finish the story like it needs to be finished.
Yeah. So we need to be apprised of what our kids are seeing, whether they're in a parochial or a Christian or a private school or a public school. All parents need to see what their kids are seeing, and they need to respond in a healthy manner to that.
So, Meg, I'm a big fan of being engaged with culture. There's a lot in culture that we rightly hold at a distance, but as much as is possible, especially with the stories of our culture, I think we need to engage. So as a parent, when my kids were younger, and I have them in a variety of ages now, but I read the books they read. I listened to the music they listened to. I mean, when my son started getting older and wanted to buy all their own music, all right, you're buying it on my account.
Yeah.
So I can see what you buy. And what we'll do occasionally is we'll sit down and we'll read lyrics together.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to websites of bands and see if this is the kind of band we want to support. And then I want to watch movies with my kids. This wasn't always easy because, frankly, when they're a lot younger, Barney just drove me to tears. But
I liked him. Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to engage on my boys' level. And I want to early on embed myself in their lives and have this conversation with them.
But wait a minute. Let me stop you there. Because some parents will say, I'm going to do that. And they will take 11, 12-year-old kids to R-rated movies. And my concern is when a parent sits down and watches a movie that can be harmful to a child, you're basically sanctioning that. You're putting on your stamp of approval. And our position, my position with my husband as well, is say, these are the movies we don't want you to see, because we don't want to see them. So are you saying that's not a good thing to do?
Right. We move as parents from when our kids are very young, we control everything. But eventually they're going to leave our house and we'll control nothing in some sense. So we're on this continuum as they're growing where we are trying to help them build moral and intellectual muscle. So, yes, when my kids were very young, I was very restrictive of everything they read, watched, listened to. As they got older, I had to give them more and more freedom because I wanted them to learn how to make choices apart from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience, Meg, I grew up Mennonite.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a very sheltered environment. And my parents, we didn't have a TV. We didn't listen to secular music. It was very self-contained.
Yeah.
And I don't fault my parents for that. As a parent now, I understand that urge.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happened was when I got out on my own, I was like a media glutton.
Really?
Because I had never built the muscle on how to be discerning, and I fell into some very bad habits very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I've tried to do with my boys is embed myself in their life, and I talk worldview. I talk the messages both taught and assumed in the movies, the books, the music. And I tell you what, Meg, right now with my 21-year-old, and I was telling you this earlier, I Facebooked him this week and said, all right, give me some honest feedback about how this went, walking you through entertainment. Right now, we go see movies together.
Mm-hmm.
We recommend books for each other. We recommend Spotify stations. I have a really good relationship with my son, but I approached it very differently than my dad approached it with me. And I had a good relationship with my dad, but he didn't embed himself in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I'm a big fan of as parents. Obviously, you are drawing lines and saying these things you can't do.
Right.
But as they get older, just becoming such a normal part of their life that they don't think twice that, hey, my dad or my mom is watching movies with me.
Right.
And then it's leaving there, you have the conversations with them. What did you think of that scene? What did you think of that hero?
Yeah.
Can I give you one more example real quick?
Please do.
My son and I started going to a gym together when he was in high school. And one of the things in that gym that was not as good was they played some music that was pretty raw.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, I don't know if I want my son hearing this music, but I also knew he was getting exposed to it at school, and he probably already knew the songs, even if he wasn't listening to them in our own home. What I ended up doing is we'd leave the gym and I'd go, AJ, did you notice in that one song how awkward the room got? Did you think about how the women must have felt while those lyrics were being sung? And I just tried to take that opportunity, knowing that, you know, he's almost ready to go to college and be on his own. I've got to get him thinking about what's happening. And as time went on, he began to see those dynamics very clearly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'd start to bring it up on the way home.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's wonderful. That's one of the beautiful differences, I think, between father parents and mother parents. Now, if I would have been in the gym, I would have gone over to my girls and I would have started yelling and I would have hauled them out there because I would have been on a crusade. No, we're not going to listen to. But the self-control that you exhibit in the gym to not just start railing, because you're a very passionate person and you believe very deeply and strongly about many things. And I'm the same way, but I just have a hard time containing it. And I think that what you're talking about is critical in great parenting, because you embed yourself, but you're not constantly telling your kids how bad stuff is.
That's one of the things.
That's hard. I think mothers have a harder time with that than dads. I really do. Walt is the same way. He'll sit there and listen, and I'll go, say something. And he'll go, no, I want to hear the whole thing. And maybe it's because we need to use more words, but that's incredible.
I'm not saying it was easy. I don't want to downplay this. There was a lot of prayer during this process.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how it is with teens, and I'll just throw all my boys under the bus here. But, you know, with teens, it's hard because there are times when they really want to push back against, they're finding the boundaries of standards and rules. So there's this fine line you're walking with. How do I draw the line and hold it where I need to? And what are the times where I have to learn to have some flexibility and some give? Let them grow up with me being a part of that growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, rather than me controlling everything until they're 20 and suddenly they're gone and they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of prayer. There was discussions with my wife because, Meg, I second-guessed myself a lot because I was worried. And, you know, I'll second guess this with my other boys, too. I'm always worried that I'm not seeing what that sweet spot is of protecting them and building them.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to throw a wrench in here. There are going to be parents who are listening who go, that's great, that's great. I'm my 15, 16, 17-year-old boy's buddy. And we go to all these movies. And we play video games together. And somebody like me comes along and says, it's not great bonding time on a Saturday afternoon to sit down and play 3 hours of Grand Theft Auto or Halo. Okay?
Right.
But they say, no, it is, because I don't want to put restrictions on what my kids do. I want to be like them and act like them and talk like them and be around their friends because I don't want to push them away. But I know you well enough that you were able to navigate that area, embed yourself in there, but still be the dad. How did you do that?
Okay, so my goal was never to be the cool dad. It might have helped that I was a teacher, and the teachers, they tell you, you know, you don't smile for 3 weeks or whatever it is.
The first 3 weeks.
That's right. Establish authority first.
Yeah.
When I coached, same thing. You can't be a buddy and be a coach. You got to be a coach first. And in both those scenarios, I've built wonderful, deep friendships with my students and with players I coached, mm-hmm. but not because my primary purpose was to be a buddy. My primary purpose was to lead well with mm-hmm. the responsibility that I had been given. And if I did that with character and with integrity, there was going to be a relationship that followed. So with my boys, no, my goal is not to be their buddy. In fact, when they're young, my goal is very much to be their dad. And that means a lot of love is tough love and strict love. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not tough and strict, it's not love.
Right.
So early on, I'm establishing, I love you boys enough. I care about you enough. I cannot let you do this. I cannot let you listen to this and read this and watch this. Mm-hmm. And I would walk them through why, Meg. I would say, let's just say it was video game time. I don't want you rotting your brain.
Yeah.
And they'd go, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
No, seriously. And not that they cared, but I think it paid off over time. I'd say, no, I've been reading the studies. Do you understand this affects your brain and harms your ability to think and process the world? Music and movies the same way. And I would explain to them, not because I thought they understood or cared at that age, because I didn't understand or care at that age,
right.
but because I want them to know I care enough about them to protect them.
Right.
As they get older, that love and I care enough to start to let you go.
Yeah.
But that's where I feel like I earned the right as a parent to continue to be a part of my life, because as they get older, they recognize dad didn't always want to do that. When my kids were younger, I remember having a conversation with my oldest one numerous times. I don't know if he's going to listen to this podcast or not, where I would say, listen, here's the way life works. You control yourself or someone else will.
Oh, so, that's fabulous. Would you say that again?
Yeah, you control yourself or someone else will.
Yeah.
So if you control yourself, homework, dating, music, you name it, hey, you and I are going to get along great. You're going to love spending time with me because everything's going to be fine. But if you don't, I will. And then it's going to get really tense.
Yes.
But then there was times, Meg, where it did get really tense and I had to go back as a parent. I had to apologize. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times I had to say, AJ, I am sorry. I didn't handle that well. He was my oldest son. There was a lot of times I said, I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm doing in this situation. Mm-hmm. You just need to know that. Maybe I never gave this challenge to my dad, or I've never seen it play out. Work with me. Yeah. And I can remember times sitting in the car crying, having conversations, both of us. But we walked into it.
Yeah.
And somehow in those earlier years or the younger years of the really hard, tough love, mm-hmm. combined with, and Lord knows I didn't do it perfectly, Meg, I don't want to give any false idea out there, of often going back in humility and saying, I'm sorry, I didn't know what I was doing. And sometimes it was I was too strict, and sometimes it was I didn't protect you enough.
Right.
And then as they get older, now we've established a base that we're building on.
Yes. Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Anthony Weber. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Tastiness is the number one reason kids choose a snack. So providing an option that's both tasty and healthy is a no-brainer. Made entirely of orchard fresh apples and other wholesome fruit, Go-Go Squeeze is an all-natural 100% fruit snack with no artificial anything. It comes in a squeezable pouch so kids can enjoy it anytime, anywhere. And with 14 great tasting varieties, just calling it applesauce doesn't even begin to describe it. They even offer fruit and veggies blends like Mighty Mango, made with apple, mango, and butternut squash, or Zippin' Zingin' Pear, made with pears, apples, and carrots. Your kids are sure to love it, so try Go-Go Squeeze today. Ladies, stop tugging at your bra straps and second-guessing your size. It's time to put fit first with Third Love. Third Love uses women's real measurements and super smoothing memory foam to create bras that fit better and are more comfortable. They offer sizes from AA to G, as well as their exclusive half cup sizes. Just answer a few simple questions online and Third Love will recommend a bra in the right size and style for you. And now, Third Love is offering you a chance to try one of their perfect 24/7 bras free for 30 days. Just pay $2.99 for shipping and you're on your way to a perfect fit. You'll get to really live in this bra. Feel free to wash it,
Wear it all day. You might even forget you're wearing it. If Third Love isn't your new favorite bra, just return or exchange it for free. Go to thirdlove.com/Meg now to get your perfect Third Love bra and try it for 30 days. That's thirdlove.com/Meg to try your new favorite bra for free. thirdlove.com/Meg.
I find that many parents are afraid for their kids. They're afraid about what their kids are going to be exposed to. They're afraid about the influence of music and television and the internet and video games on their kids. And yet they respond by throwing their hands up, feeling like it's too overwhelming. You know, there's a big beast out there that wants to gobble my kids up, and I don't really know if I can guard myself against it. But as I listen to you walking your kids through adolescence, and yes, movies are worse today than they probably were 10 years ago when AJ was 11, okay?
Right.
Yeah, but they were bad then. It sounds to me like you weren't afraid. Is that fair to say? Because talk to parents who feel afraid of what the influence that movies and games and music is going to have on their kids.
So if there's one thing that I would say I'm afraid of, it's pornography.
Yeah.
Because that is, it's such a huge issue and it's so pervasive. That's one that just leaves devastation in its wake. Not that people can't be forgiven and find healing, but that the ubiquity of that one worries me.
Yeah.
When it comes to most other things, Meg, because I take the opinion that I think culture needs to be engaged, it doesn't frighten me as long as we are looking through them, listening, reading, watching with a Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had multiple conversations with non-Christian friends of mine over shows that we both watch, and I've discovered that as a Christian, because I'm listening and reading and watching with the Bible in mind, is this giving me truth about the world? Am I seeing that sin has consequences?
Mm-hmm.
Am I watching real stories of redemption and hope and forgiveness? I find that I have a remarkably different takeaway from shows than a lot of my friends do.
Yeah. And can you give me an example?
Oh, sure. The Walking Dead is one show that I think is, it's a show that asks profound moral questions, though obviously it's incredibly violent. We could have another conversation about how it's probably moved the boundaries between what's been allowed on TV. I discovered a lot of people who watch that, they just watch it for the violence. They love it. They just the gore, that was the thing that mattered to them. Meanwhile, I'm skipping those parts and shutting my eyes. I'm like, that's gross.
Yeah.
Because I'm fascinated by the moral and ethical dilemmas, the character development, watching. Once again, I'm watching this going, that Christian character in the show is a really good representation of what a Christian is. And I'm shocked to find this in a show that's written by an atheist.
Yeah.
So that's just one example, and I'm not recommending that show for everybody.
Did
I want to be clear.
Did you let your boys watch it as teenagers?
No, my boys don't watch it.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And once again, it's not that I recommend the show.
You just see it very differently.
I see it differently, yeah. But that's also, Meg, part of what I do.
Right.
So I watch and engage with a lot of things that if I weren't doing it purposefully to blog and to teach and things like that, I wouldn't engage as much. So I want to be real clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen that. I remember, it was a show set in the 20s or 30s, Mad Men.
Yes.
I might have that wrong. I watched a little bit of that. I didn't care for it. But I discovered very quickly what I saw as this story about the moral downfall of the main character spiraling out of control. You saw it in the opening credits of the show where he's falling off of a building. And the whole show is just unpacking his marriage is failing. His friendships are failing. Everything is falling apart. And meanwhile, I'm reading articles online from people where everybody wants to be the main guy. And I'm looking at that as a Christian going, how do you take that away from a show that is showing you that the wages of sin is death?
Right. Well, you're right, because but don't you think we're sort of, media manipulates our thinking too?
Absolutely.
And they make it look so glamorous and they make it look lovely. You know, it's like the 50 Shades of Grey thing.
Right.
Talk about me railing. I rail on
right.
it because it's pure porn. I mean, you were talking about pornography and all the young girls that just, you know, flood into these movies and their parents are letting these young kids see these movies. They're just, you know, masochistic. It's terrible.
Twilight wasn't much better.
Yeah.
Just on a different level.
Yeah. Let's be very specific and talk about themes. We talked about it earlier in the podcast, and that is the theme of parentless homes, mm-hmm. or the breakup of the family, and how we teach our kids that those things aren't, while a child who may hurt because the parents are divorced and he sees a child growing up and there's divorce in there, A, the child doesn't necessarily have a good outcome in the show. You know, they do show his misery. But what are some other themes that they're getting that crop up over and over in movies? And how should parents teach their kids to push back from those? One of the ones that I'm thinking of is that, you know, sex is fine with anybody, anywhere, anytime. And talk about a behavior that has no bad consequences. You never see a bad consequence in a movie on sex. It's all glamorized.
Right.
And it sets kids up for misery, boys included, because they think everybody should be like Brad Pitt or whatever they imagine him to be. So what kind of themes do you see cropping up that kids get that parents should push back against?
I'd say for younger kids, one of the themes you often see is, once again, the idea of that the parents or adults are incompetent and it's all kid power. So that's something to watch for. And it's in almost everything, frankly, yeah. other than one exception I could think of is Inside Out was a really good movie with a strong parental couple. Mm-hmm. You could even argue Zootopia mm-hmm. for young kids had a nice family structure at the heart of it. But that's something just to watch for.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, reflects that many kids, unfortunately, are raised in homes where that's what it feels like. Yeah. And that may well be true. But I think that comes back to parents living lives of integrity and godliness and wisdom mm-hmm. so that it's real clear to your child if they're watching something like that, well, this clearly isn't my parents.
Yeah.
Or even if you're watching that with your child, you choose to let them watch that, just going, boy, that was a bad decision for the parents. Do you ever see me doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Start when they're young, asking kids to reflect how they experience you as parents so that you're making that distinction between what's on the screen and what their life is like.
When should parents start engaging their kids about what's going on in television and movies?
As soon as you can.
Okay.
Honestly.
6, 7, 8 years old?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even Land Before Time movies, my kids really liked them.
Boy, that's taking us back.
That's taking us back. Some good Spielberg there with the first one. Okay, but the first Land Before Time movie, the opening sequence is one that promotes evolution, not by teaching it, but simply by showing it. It's just mm-hmm. assumed. There's it was Land Before Time 10 or something way down the line. One of them had alien dinosaurs land and the claim to start life on Earth, which actually ties into what a number of top atheists today are claiming about how they think life on Earth started. There's worldviews in even those stories.
Yeah.
And so watching that with your child, if you're going to let them watch it, at the end of that opening sequence that shows things crawling out of the sea, etc., going, okay, that was silly.
Yeah.
I mean, so if you choose to let them do it, just make the comments, because even small things that you say, I think, build great momentum over time.
But for parents to say them in the right way, to say them the way you would say them and not say them the way I would say them.
How would you say it, Meg?
That's ridiculous. You're not going to watch that. You know, our kids laugh at me and what I would and would not let them watch as they were younger. And now as parents themselves, it's really fun because I find that they're even stricter with television than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do want our listeners to know that you taught our girls in high school and they loved you as a teacher. And the course, Understanding the Times, for them changed their lives.
In that course, we actually watched some teaching from John Stone Street back when before he was with Chuck Colson's ministry, mm-hmm. where he did a teaching on entertainment. And he has three criteria that I often use that I think are really solid. Is something good, is something true, is something noble. By good, he means, is it done with excellence? So don't watch lousy stuff. Watch mm-hmm. things that are done well. Is it true? Does it tell truth about the world? And that could be honestly showing the consequences of sin. It could be showing the benefit of righteousness. But is it honest about the world?
Mm-hmm.
And the noble is, does it make you want to be a better person?
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot more to do with your heart, with your mind. If I'm watching a show with my boys, I want to know when we walk away from that, do they want to be better men because they saw that? Or is there something about the heroes that I'm really uncomfortable with? Or is there language language or violence or sexual situations, things like that, that no, that's distracted from the message. And now they're going to be consumed and formed by that rather than positive messages.
Right. Those are great questions for any parent to ask. You know, whether you have a Christian faith or whether you don't, is it good? Is it true? Is it noble? Because I think all parents want their kids to watch things that are done well and that are true and that make them want to be better people.
Right.
Fathers, let's talk about fathers and how they're portrayed in movies and media. It's really hard to find a smart dad out there. You know, one of my favorite movies was Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith.
I did not see that one.
Oh, it's to me, it was excellent. He's a single dad who's very poor and he has a son and he's a very, very smart man and sort of pulls himself up and does well. And I just thought he was a really good dad. But in many movies, fathers are portrayed as such idiots. Does that change the way our kids treat their own fathers?
I have not noticed a correlation, but then again, I don't let my kids be consumed by entertainment. So it's hard for me to gauge that with other families. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've noticed, let's take a show like The Middle, which is a pretty entertaining show.
Yes.
But the dad is very quiet.
Yes.
In many ways, he's not a good dad, though he clearly has a good heart.
Yes.
Okay, we watch that show as a family and we laugh, but we also make comments like, you know, just talk, have a conversation. So even as we're watching, we're not watching passively. We're watching very actively.
Yeah.
And I feel like that active engagement is a very important part of what we do with entertainment nowadays. And that's true for Christian and non-Christian entertainment.
Right.
Right. It's a fallen world.
All
nothing's perfect. All of it.
Yeah.
So being active with it is huge.
Yeah.
Interactive as you watch it, if it's appropriate, but then revisiting it later.
Yeah. Because the truth of the matter is in a lot of the movies, whether parents would say, I'd never let my kids watch that, I would. You know, often there's some good that you can extract from it. But, you know, you don't want your child to be damaged. For instance, one of the things that I see in young boys who watch violent movies too early is night issues. They have sleep difficulties. I can't tell you how many 6th and 7th and 8th grade boys I have in my practice where parents say they're having difficulty sleeping. They're coming into my room and they're way too old for that. But what happens is a lot of boys will watch violence because their buddies are watching violence. It disturbs them. They have nightmares, but they don't want to tell anybody. Because they're a guy.
Interesting.
And I see it more with boys than I do with girls, because girls will talk about it. Modern Family. A lot of Christians will say, I'm not going to watch Modern Family. And yet, if you look at a lot of the characters, they spend a lot of family time together. What are your thoughts on a show like that?
So that's a show, once again, that's an interesting one, because on the one hand, it is promoting family. And
yes.
Why would we be against promoting family?
Right.
And I've not watched it much, and I'll tell you why in a second. But my understanding is that a number of the families in there are fairly good representations of flawed but loving families.
Yes.
Obviously, the controversial part is the gay couple.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't watch it. One of the reasons I don't is because I tend to be more leery of comedy than I am of drama.
Really?
Because comedy gets my defenses down. I laugh about things I shouldn't laugh about.
Oh.
So another example is The Office.
Yes.
I found The Office to be very entertaining, and then there was one day I was watching and I realized I'm laughing about things I shouldn't laugh about, that if in the real world someone in my church was in this situation, I would not be laughing, I'd be crying. And I stopped watching.
So do you think that there are shows, their comedy desensitizes us, do you think, more than violence?
Well, think about it this way. If you watch a drama, okay, so I'm a big fan, Meg, of watching things where the proper emotion wells out of you that ought to be attached to what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm watching a drama, generally speaking, that drama is trying to pull my emotions in a particular direction, and usually properly. You grieve violence and anger, and a show that got a lot of press was Breaking Bad.
Yes.
If you want to do a public service announcement on don't do drugs, you could do far worse than showing Breaking Bad, because if you saw it, I watched some of it because I was interested in the culture phenomenon. I quit on one show where they showed a child growing up in the home with two parents who were addicted to meth.
Mm.
It was overwhelming to me emotionally because I was so heartbroken for the kid. Even though it's a TV show, I couldn't handle it.
Right.
But my thought was, that's actually good TV, because I ought to have my heart broken by situations. Didn't glamorize it. My dilemma for me, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, my dilemma with comedy is that I have discovered over the years that if I'm not careful, all my defenses go down, because if you can get me to laugh, I think it's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you get you to laugh. Yeah. Wow. You know, I never really thought about that at all, because everybody wants to laugh, and we want to laugh at people's foibles, and we want to laugh at the foil in the show, and because often that's us. You know, as we leave our time together, Anthony, I'd like you to just give parents two or three things to really hang on when it comes to media, because again, this is a big deal for a lot of parents. They just feel overwhelmed, and they feel they don't want to say no to their kids because, like you, they realize their kids are going to see this, they want them to engage, and they want to teach them, but maybe they don't have the interest or the time to embed themselves in their kids' lives to the degree you did, which is fabulous because you really walked your kids all through it in a very rational, reasonable manner. A couple of tips that you could give our parents as they walk forward in thinking about how to help their kids navigate movies and media.
So I'll give five quick ones.
Great.
I'll make them quick.
Perfect.
Number one, just be involved from a very young age. And that doesn't mean giving them everything they want, trying to be their buddies, but just as you allow them to listen, watch, read, know what it is. And if you can't actually see and listen to everything they do, find reviews.
Okay.
Find out what other people are saying. There's great Christian sites out there, Plugged In, for example, Focus on the Family. If you don't have the time, other Christians are also monitoring this for you. Mm-hmm. And then talk. So that brings me to my second one, speak biblical truth with grace. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to be honest about what's good or bad about something, but remember that you're trying to care for their hearts even as you're caring for their heads. Mm-hmm. And you can lose your kids if all you focus on is winning this battle and being right and right. getting the rule followed without really being aware of how you're handling their heart in the right. process.
And being over-controlling. I mean, being a controlling parent is kind of easy because you just say no all the time. And you just get louder and firmer. But that's not really what you're talking about. You're saying find the right movies and good movies that are age
right.
appropriate
yep.
and walk your kids into that. But there are some movies that are and music that are off limits.
Correct.
At every age.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Third thing I would say is, as parents, model the proper purposeful use of music and movies and TV or whatever it is. In other words, if you're a parent who just vegges and watches stuff mindlessly, your kids will do that too. Mm-hmm. And if you're a parent, you're driving everywhere and you're listening to any song that comes on the radio, your kids are going to do that too. Yeah. They're going to see and learn from what you do. So be purposeful. And I'm hesitant to give real specific standards for everybody and what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. But my boys know that when I'm watching TV shows or movies or listening to the radio, I often blog about it for that matter. Yeah. And my boys will read what I blog. Mm-hmm. So they know that as I'm going into situations, I don't veg with entertainment. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for the story and trying to understand how does this connect you to my culture in a way where I can present the gospel through this particular story or song, etc. A fourth one, help them build moral muscle. That just means as they get older and we start to give them more and more freedom, we need to do that before they leave our influence.
Right.
And that's hard and it's tricky and it requires prayer and talking with other Christian parents. What are you doing? All these kinds of things. But otherwise, if we keep them in a bubble and one day they leave, that rarely ends well.
Right.
And then finally, I'd say surround your kids with strong Christian community, mm-hmm. whether that's your youth group, your youth pastor, other godly adults. I mean, frankly, most of our kids go through a phase where they don't really care what we have to say.
Oh, yeah.
So I've tried very hard to position people in my boy's life who I value and I trust and say, would you please engage with them? I have multiple times over the years called people up and said, I need you to talk to my boy about this.
Wow.
And of course,
even as a pastor.
Yeah, even as a pastor. Maybe more so as a pastor,
really.
Meg.
You know, our kids, we were talking about this before we started our podcast, but my kids are just a bit older than yours because you taught our kids, but they grow up and they tell you what you did right and what you did wrong. And one of the interesting things that my son said is that he really appreciated my husband's and my friends. Hmm. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, it always made me feel like you were less of a freak because your friends were the same way. You know, in other words, we surrounded ourselves with friends who thought like we did, and their kids were taught similarly. So there's a real sense of community belief system.
Yeah.
And that impacts kids. And it's exactly what you're saying. You know, you were more direct about it. You know, I mean, you talk to your kids about movies. I went around the town talking to our, all the kids in this community about not being sexually active.
That wasn't awkward at all for your kids.
No, that was really hard for my kids, particular son, you know. But I think that we can't underestimate the influence that other adults that are our age have on our children, because our kids are watching those people too. Yep. You know, you had an enormous impact on our kids because they respected you. And when you talked to them and dialogued with them about deep issues, they love it because they feel smart.
Right.
When an adult talks to a child like they're a smart person and a thinking person, they'll do almost anything you want them to do.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony. This has been really wonderful, and I hope our audience has gotten a lot of really great information. I just wanted to have you give our audience your website, because you're an amazing writer and blogger.
So I have a blog called Empires and Mangers, and it's at empiresandmangers.blogspot.com. The whole title, which is really awkward, is just kind of meant to juxtapose Jesus coming in a manger into the Roman Empire, and that we as Christians are always in this tension. We're people of the manger living in empires. And so I try to write about entertainment, current events, a number of things like that.
Yeah,
so
wonderful.
Hopefully it's helpful in some
wonderful
fashion.
Well, you know, you're right, because as we've had our whole conversation, there is a tension, and it's hard to communicate to parents how to walk that tension between being too controlling but too much of a buddy. But you can do it, because you're obviously testimony that you've done it.
Well, I'm doing it imperfectly. I want to be really clear about that.
Yeah, you're doing it pretty well. Your blog is empiresandmangers.blogspot.com. I strongly recommend that our listeners go to it, because you're going to learn a whole lot. And as you learn, then you can turn and teach it to your children as well. So God bless, Anthony. Thank you.
You too. Thanks, Meg.
All right, parents, let's get social. I want to hear from you and interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Or if you have a question, please send it to me at askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Again, that's askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Today I have a question from Blair, who writes, "Dear Dr. Meg, my son just turned 4 and he snaps at the drop of a hat. Runs to his room, slams doors, etc. When I go and try to talk to him, he ignores me or gets more mad, and at times he starts to bite his clothes or hit himself. I believe he just doesn't know how to express his anger. We're trying so hard to talk softer and avoid confrontation and discipline in a way that doesn't set him off. Is this wise? How should we handle this situation? We want him to know when he's doing wrong that it's wrong, but we don't want to run his life with an iron fist." Blair, great question, and I'm so happy that you wrote in. You have identified something very important, and that is your 4-year-old son is exhibiting behavior that really isn't normal. Biting his clothes and hitting himself is not normal for an upset 4-year-old boy to do. The fact that he's doing these things tells me that he's very afraid, or he's very upset. Perhaps he's afraid to express himself to you, which seems kind of ironic because you said he's having meltdowns and he's slamming the door and he's running to his room. But my sense is he's afraid and he doesn't know how to adequately express himself. Could he be afraid to be angry in front of you? Have you been overly angry with him? If he, for instance, has perceived that you have been harsh with him, he will become afraid. If you or his mom or somebody else has yelled at him, he will be afraid to express his own feelings. And when kids are afraid to express their feelings, they snap, they run, they do crazy things. So your question is, what do you do with him now? First of all, you need to talk softly to him. Don't avoid confrontation, and certainly don't avoid discipline. What I would do if he were my son is, when he snaps and runs to his room, I would go up to his room and I would sit there. Don't try to talk to him. Don't try to say anything to him. Try to comfort him. Remember, he's afraid. He's not just angry, he's afraid. And you need to teach him not to be afraid. And do that for a couple of weeks. And then over time, you need to learn to speak very firmly, but very gently to him, because he is a very sensitive child. So that's very important. You don't want to throw out discipline. He needs to know what is right to do and what is wrong to do. And with a son like this, I would choose a form of discipline that isn't terribly harsh. For instance, I would have him go sit in a timeout, or I would take away some of his toys. When he misbehaves and he breaks the rules, your discipline should be swift. It should be without screaming, without reprimand. It should be just very matter of fact. It shouldn't be frightening for him. I promise you, if you learn to comfort him, if you're patient with him, if you control the way you speak to him and make your discipline very matter of fact and not harsh, he will come around. Parents, I love answering your questions, so please keep sending them in to me. You can email your parenting questions to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. That's askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guest, Anthony Weber. What a wonderful conversation we've had. Anthony talks about being bold in your kids' lives and not doing what his parents did. They were great parents, but rather than telling your kids they can't watch anything and that the television never goes on and they can't pull their laptop on, engage your kids with the media. Talk to them, teach them, and ask them questions about what they're seeing. Let's recap my points to ponder now. First, embed yourselves in your kids' worlds. Tough stuff to do, but it's very important. Watch the shows your kids are watching and be informed. Two, ask good questions about the shows your kids are watching. And three, set clear game rules about media and tell kids why. So until next time, parents, remember, great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 34, Helping Kids Navigate Messages from Media. And thanks to all of you, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over 1 million downloads. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at MegMeekerMD. Just as a reminder, go to MegMeekerMD.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode. We'll